The meeting of House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:12. With us today, we have Representative Gatto, Ladue, Newman, Ramirez, Book, and Gardner, and myself, Olson. First item on the agenda today will be continuation of House Bill 146. And I believe, are you going to carry it, Representative Coghill, or?
We're going to do continuation of 146. Did we already bring it up once?
No.
Oh, we didn't? Well, we'll bring it up now then. We almost brought it up once.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Coghill from the District of North Pole. And thank you for bringing up House Bill. You said continuation, and all of a sudden my brain started looking for, okay, when did I talk about this last?
That was a test.
Thank you. I just failed the test. Mr. Chairman, this is a postmark bill. Let me explain to you why I brought it forward. In paying my bills over the last few years, I've been fairly diligent, and I say fairly because I've actually missed a few significant payments down through the years. I've been fairly diligent in writing a check and getting it to the people I owe money to for services, including credit card services, which this is primarily about, but also for phone and other services. And there are some people, there's a phone service group in Alaska that I subscribe to. I have a phone delivered by them. I pay for it every month. And what they do is they do their billing in Seattle. They print their billing. I've actually chased this down. It's been a problem, personal, I guess you could say, one of those things that just sets wrong with you. They bundle them in Seattle. They bring them to Anchorage, and then they mail them to their customers out of Anchorage. And sometimes mine get a round trip from Anchorage to Fairbanks and back up to North Pole, and which I found out since is a post office problem that they just now started that kind of interesting dynamic. But be that as it may, they'll stamp them one day. I'll get them sometimes 10 days after that, and by the time I get them, I'm probably within a five-day window of having to pay it without a penalty, and with no comfort that if I put a first-class letter in the mail that day that they would be able to get it in the time that has been allotted. And so that's been a problem of mine, but in putting the electrical services, telephone services in this bill, I've created no small stir. The benefit to me has been able to relay that story to a variety of different people so that they understand that many of the customers, and I'm in North Pole, which is a fairly decent mail carrier system. If you lived in Fort Yukon or Chalkeetsik or in Nulato, it gets even worse, sometimes by 3 or 4 days. And so folks have some pretty significant issues there, and I would hope that those who deliver services to people on a monthly basis, whether it's insurance, because I just talked to an insurance carrier before coming into this hearing, that they would become more sensitive to that. However, Mr. Chairman, one of the bigger problems is the credit card companies, in my view, because their system is a little different. They have, I think, three or maybe four now clearinghouses where they will take, for all these large credit card companies, they will take and process these payments. And what they do is they have a national clearinghouse, and then the credit is electronic between them and their customer. For example, a Visa, like I have a Bank AmeriCard. There have been a couple times where I've challenged the timing of a payment, and they will explain to me the process. And I'll say, well, you know, you had the money. What's the problem? You took it out of my bank account, but you're saying it got there late. And I can show when it was taken out of my bank account, and yet they charge me the interest rate because they personally did not have that credit. So I'm saying maybe the best thing to do is to have a definitive. that when I mail the check to them, that is a legitimate payment date, because I can't prove when they get it. That's part of the problem. They could hang on to it for 3 days. They could hang on to it for 4 days. I don't know. The mail could take 10 days. So the fact is, if you're going to do payment by mail, you're going to have to figure you're going to pay a penalty. Now, personally, I've gone to electronic payments. I would suggest everybody that is capable of doing it do it that way, because it puts a finality to it. But I can tell you, even with paying it electronically, I can be sometimes 5 days over their time limit. That's amazing to me. But I think, though there's going to be an FCC question, a federal commission question, I still think we should send it as a matter of interest. And I think a statutory provision would probably get us more notice than a simple resolution. So I'm willing to send it up as a challenge. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I think what I will do is I will show to you an amendment that I'm bringing forward that I have suggested that you entertain, and that would be to take the section that says instead of including services, it would put excluding services, for example, excluding electrical and telephone services, which would take the utility payments out of this particular bill, because there's a larger problem than I had anticipated in this. So I would defer to the testimony that you're going to have in front of committee.
I think we're probably going to get it right across first.
Okay.
Do you want me to move the amendment number one?
Call it number one.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
Hearing no opposition, do you want to explain the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's just to take the utility payments and the electrical services payments out of this particular.
Yeah, I'll object for purposes of discussion. But
and I think I've caused some consternation in the bill mailing industry for services and telephone services. But I think that it's worthy of note that it's a consumer problem.
Representative Coghill, good afternoon. I'm a co-sponsor of your bill because I like it for the same reasons, and so I also have received the same phone calls and letters and concerns that you have, and I'm happy to have moved your amendment number one. My question is whether this covers a satisfactory amount of utilities, because water companies, for instance, are not covered and or cable, and so I read the amendment. That's why I want to object, is to see whether I need to amend the amendment, how broad we're going to take this. We met with the small little telephone carrier that services all these little village communities and small rural communities, and he told me that this would require him to save all the postmarks.
No, the envelopes.
The envelopes, because they include the postmark data, and surely that wasn't my intent as a co-sponsor. And so this language helps very specifically, but I want to make sure that we're – so I share your frustration after I co-sponsored the bill. Are we bringing enough relief to the various utilities? I mean, does this create a problem for Golden Heart Utilities, which is a water company, for instance, or some of the other folks? Mm-hmm. Does this do it, or?
Mr. Chairman, what I'll do is I'll ask my staff to look up the definition of the statute referenced on page 1, line 14, AS 4205-990, which talks about public utilities. But I think it does fit most of those, but I'll read it to you as soon as my staff puts it in front of me.
I'd be curious as to whether or not it included electrical co-ops.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The number of them in the state. Like the first one that's calling in.
And it was not my intention to cause undue harm, but I really did have a legitimate question, Mr. Chairman, on consumer protection. If it looks like they can satisfy me on this, I will maintain the amendment and not push for it. But if I feel that it can be worked on. I might come back and ask for it. But there's a larger question also on what can we do with the credit cards. So I really did want to address that.
Representative Newman, and then Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Representative Ramos went right to the heart of my first question, is what is a public utility company being considered for-profit, non-profit? I mean, that's a pretty broad explanation there.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just reference the definition as quoted in this particular statute here, 4205-990. It actually has a rather large definition. Public utility includes every corporation, whether public, corporate, or otherwise, company, individual, or association of individuals, their lessees, trustees, or receivers appointed by a court that owns, operates, manages, or controls any plant, pipeline, or system for generation, transmission, distribution, electrical, telecom, water, steam, sewer service, natural gas, petroleum products, garbage, trash, and that's it. So quite a wide range of public services.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll speak to that's pretty much to the amendment, and I'm still not quite sure who that's all going to include, if we can maybe get that in writing.
Or possibly who's left.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty wide open there, and then I will speak to the bill after that. Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
You know, I'm looking at this definition of public utility, and it seems pretty broad. But it seems to not have the word, it says whether public, cooperative, or otherwise. And I think that includes private, but I would have thought that the definition actually would have said private if it meant private. And I know that there are some private companies, like telephone companies, that might not be picked up by this definition, but then again, they might be, because it says or otherwise. So I'm just not
Mr.
sure.
Mr. Chairman, and you have in here individual or association of individuals, so I think it probably would otherwise and individual, if you put those together, I think you'd come up with a conclusion. If you had for example, if you had one owner in a community that owned the generator and charged everybody for that service, my guess is that would be not only an individual, but an otherwise guy.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. So do I understand that with this amendment, we're excluding utilities because it's inconvenient and expensive for them to make the change the bill proposes, but we don't really care about other types of businesses?
On the contrary, Mr. Chairman, it has very little to do with the inconvenience. It had probably more to do with the ability. And I think you take some of the smaller groups, you run into that ability. So what happens is you put everybody under one blanket law, and I think opinion expressed by Representative Ledoux really gets to that. Now, there is an inconvenience in the state, I grant you that. I've already expressed my less than sympathetic view on that, but because of the blanket nature of it, it just hit everybody. And my real question the people in Alaska really get hammered with credit cards probably much more significantly than they do with regular monthly billings. So that's why I thought I would want to go in to a bigger realm. Also, I just got handed a note from the person who feeds me good information all the time. For what it's worth, the public utilities already regulate these utilities and can charge late fee issues. So let's see, it says very difficult and costly to impose on regulated utilities as regulated in terms of billing. So I will defer to my staff on that, because I'm going to have to they allowed the speaker called. I have to be there in 2 minutes, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I know. I know. Big sympathy from you, right?
Representative called me today too. Well,
you know, thank you, Chair. Representative Coghill, you've mentioned three or four times that your main objective is to make sure the credit card companies are the ones that you're holding to this. Would it be easier to present an amendment that says you include, you want to just do credit card companies instead of this total bill?
I think as Representative Gardner brought up the matter of convenience, probably your in-state issues are a little harder because of that capacity. There's a lot of people that deal with the state from a national perspective. And I am probably less sympathetic with them. You're going to hear testimony from one of the insurance companies. I'm less sympathetic with some of the insurance companies, for example, because they deal with us from a good arm's length. And I have found out that their agents in Alaska, and I'm speaking to one who is very well aware, agents in Alaska sometimes get trumped by their national policies. And so I'm... I guess I would maintain that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coghill, I think insurance companies are probably more time sensitive than most companies on this because of policies and when accidents can happen. If I call my insurance company up because I just bought an automobile and that policy doesn't get there, I get in an accident, but it's the checks in the mail kind of a situation. And I see a lot of confusion in this bill.
Yeah. If you can straighten out the confusion, I've just erred on the side of saying the consumer also needs a little bit of comfort that when they've sent money in, that it's credited properly. I understand that some people can game that system, but I can tell you the insurance companies game as well. For example, a particular insurance company that I was a patron of for well over 23 years began a policy of automatically cutting off my policy 30 days prior to the expiration. And in order to get a check into them, they wanted that 30 days ahead. Otherwise, the presumption was I would automatically cancel. I just found that very objectionable.
Representative Gardner and then Representative Liddell.
Thank you. I have a question about the bill, not the amendment. Are we still on the amendment?
Yes.
Still on the amendment.
Okay, then I'll pass.
Representative Liddell.
I'm not sure whether my question's on the bill or the amendment right now. I guess the question's on the bill, so I better pass too until we've figured out what we're doing with the amendment.
Representative Coghill, your 2 minutes is up. Do you need to bail on us?
I'm feeling the heat, but as you wish, Mr. Chairman, I can leave my staff to carry on the rest of the bill if you approve the amendment. If you don't approve the amendment, we'll just push on and see how it goes.
What's the pleasure of the committee on the amendment?
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair. You know, I'd like to just speak on the amendment. I think I approve the amendment. I think I approve of it, but I mean, it's pretty broad-based here, and we haven't had very much clarification here because you're in a hurry to get to where you need to go. But I'm not sure on here. I'm not sure. I'd like to see a list of like who is it included, who it doesn't include it, and maybe you don't think that that's appropriate. But I don't want to feel like I'm being pushed to approve amendment because we don't.
Mr. Chairman, if it suits the committee and there's not a clear decision on this, I am certainly game to hold it over. This bill is meant to bring the policy discussion to the table. I don't have any great need to move in a big hurry. I just wanted to bring it up. I think it's an important consumer protection issue. I mean, it's we're Alaskans. We have to live with these people. But on the other hand, we have to have rules, and we have many rules in Alaska that protect people from various different demands that are put on them in consumer issues. So this is just one that's asking a question. Since they are given the right to charge fees and they can push the envelope as far as the time allotted to pay, do we have a need to protect consumers in that? And that's one of the reasons why I was willing to back off on these, because most of the local areas are fairly diligent at getting their billing in the right order. It's usually those outside of Alaska that create a problem for us as consumers.
Rather than moving the amendment, I think it would be appropriate to flesh it out and say specifically what it does address, because I've got a feeling once we get it out to the people that are calling in from the LIOs and they see what it covers, that we probably won't have too many phone calls.
And Mr. Chairman, what I could do is, rather than having to read the statute, I could come back to the committee with an outline that shows what would and what would not be affected by this amendment. I could do that.
That'll
if you wish.
I think we'll hold it over, and that way you can get up to
right.
the second floor.
Thank you very much. That way I'll have some height left next time I see you.
Yep. Next up is House Bill 211. You may carry that, or are you going to have your staff carry it?
Barbara, do you want to go to speak to it? I'll fill in for you.
Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, thanks for hearing this bill today. This bill has...
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
You.
I know you, but not everybody in the room does.
For the record, Barbara Cotting, staff to Representative Jay Ramirez. And this has been an interesting bill to work on. The Alaska Fire Chiefs Association has told us, and with good cause, that we are not financially able in most of our fire departments around the state to achieve the current national fire protection standards. And that puts us at jeopardy. It puts the people and their property at more jeopardy than they need to be. And I well remember how many years the Fire Chiefs Association in this state has tried to find funding sources so that they can fund their Fire Standards Council and have the means to do better training and implementation of the training standards. I remember when in 1998 the legislature established the Alaska Fire Standards Council, and its purpose was to develop and regulate training for all the fire departments in the state, but the legislature somehow just never funded it. So the council was created, but it was never funded by the legislature. So we've worked with our fire chiefs to try to find ways to fund it. And so far, this is the best way we've come up with, that they might actually finally receive some funding. We were advised by the Division of Insurance to have this only affect homeowners policies, and basically homeowners are the ones who benefit. But it adds a fee of $3 to each homeowner's policy issued or sold in Alaska. Now, this will be collected by the insurance companies and paid to the Division of Insurance when they pay their fees. And then the bill also creates an account in the general fund called the Alaska Fire Standards Council Fund, into which that $3 can be deposited. The one section of the bill, that kind of covers Section 1 and 2. Section 3 is a little more obtuse. It actually repeals a fund called the Alaska Fire Services Personnel Fund. And the bill drafter felt that was kind of not needed. It was actually established in 1998 to mirror a similar fund that the Police Standards Council had created in their enabling statutes, but it's never been used. And with the establishment of the Alaska Fire Standards Council Fund, it's just not a needed fund. It just complicates the issue. So that's why that's being repealed. And with that, I would be very happy to let Representative Ramirez.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just augment Barbara's comments. You did an excellent job, Barbara. Thank you very much. We met with the fire chiefs, and one thing I don't want to say is that this is going to bring homeowners' premiums down, which is often the refrain. In fact, what we learned when we sat with the fire chiefs is that every time that the police write a citation, a fraction of that citation goes to the Police Safety Standards Council. And the firemen don't have any ability to raise money in that capacity. We are not crazy about this funding source, but it's quite clear from the history of the Fire Safety Standards Council that no other funding source has ever emerged. And I was embarrassed in Fairbanks when we took a series of about 35 meetings in the Interior delegation from different special interest groups. And one of the most embarrassing meetings I had as a legislator was with the emergency protection and fire folks, who spelled out a pretty dire circumstance, which is that they don't get adequate training, and yet when somebody dials 911, they expect you to show up at their house or your residence or out on the street corner and to be able to perform a variety of functions and be trained up and ready to go. And I don't know, I live in the middle of Fairbanks in an urban district. And so if I dial 911, I'm going to get the City of Fairbanks Fire Department. But in many, many other parts of my community, there is a quilt of volunteer fire departments that work with paid fire departments. And it's that way across the whole state of Alaska. And I think it's really one of the more remarkable traits that we have in the state of Alaska, the fact that we all help one another. But this notion of having paid firemen and volunteer firemen not be able to integrate their skills because they haven't been able to spend the time or the energy to integrate their training, it just puts folks at risk. And I voted against the fish hatcheries a couple of years ago because I didn't think it was appropriate to have a fishing license fee that increased the taxed people on recreation. And so it was with considerable trepidation that I introduced a bill that in effect is a $3 per head tax on homeowners. And as we talked with the commissioner of insurance or the director of insurance, who's not crazy about this but said that the application can be done, we're not crazy about imposing a tax on homeowners either. But the fact is that we need paid firemen to be able to integrate with the volunteer firemen. When Representative Stoltz took me through his district in Chugiak, his favorite place to stop was at the volunteer fire station out there in Chugiak, and they were busy training outside as we pulled up. I mean, it wasn't a staged, it wasn't a milk run. They were out there practicing. And so in Fairbanks, another example, we have our ambassadors, we have our volunteers in policing, we have the other group, what's that other group that can't get funding? Do you know what they are?
Yes.
What are they called?
I can't think of it.
Yeah, it's the community service patrols. Can't get funding. We can't get funding for those also. There are a variety of groups, and the state has made it quite clear, and the finance committees have made it quite clear that they don't want to look to the state for these community funding efforts. But in fact, the Fire Safety Standards Council is statewide, and it was a concern that was expressed by all the fire chiefs that visited the building in some time ago. And I just find this to be quite appropriate, even though it's cumbersome and nobody welcomes another tax on individuals and nobody welcomes a tax that is difficult to collect, nor one that might present a slippery slope when insurance, as was pointed out by the director of insurance, Linda Hall, that insurance premiums and taxes to the state on insurance premiums represent, I think, the number two revenue stream or the number three revenue stream to the state of Alaska presently.
Number two.
Is it number two, right? But the fact is we got to figure out a way to fund the Fire Safety Standards Council, because ultimately it's going to lead to integration of volunteer and paid services. And our volunteers in policing, they don't carry guns. So asking them to integrate with, you know, paid law enforcement people is different than emergency staff, where there is an integration, where a volunteer fireman on the job can be just as valuable and just as critical in saving life or time or property as the professional firefighter that's standing, you know, shoulder to shoulder with that man or woman. And so it was with great frustration and some angst over the funding mechanism that we drafted this bill, but we don't know of a better way, and we know that going up to House Finance or the Finance Committee on the other side of the building is likely to be a brick wall. And brick walls don't necessarily burn, but people do fall from them, and they often have framed construction on the interior and of those structures. Not to overuse the analogy, but we think that figuring out a mechanism to fund the Fire Safety Standard Council just leads to better integration of that net of public safety that we all want when we dial 911. I mean, that's when we want it, is when we dial 911. You want trained personnel to show up, and if they've got to integrate with paid or volunteer force next to them, sure would like to know what the man or woman on your left or right, that there was some integration of skills and training to go along with their goodwill and being there. That's all. I think that's, is that pretty thorough? I think that's all, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Barbara, is this a $3 an annual or fee, or is it per policy, or when is the payment made?
Through the chair. Policy? It's annual per policy.
Annual per yearly policy.
One more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And referring to Representative Ramos and his angst and opposing this, reading the letter from the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, they supported a $5 fee. I think Representative Ramos, again, trying to be fiscally conservative of bringing it in at $3, at least for starters, I think it's probably reflective of that. We have a budget here that says $254,000.
Yeah, it's not much.
$254,000, and then for the policies in the state, it's $535,000, which is, you know, double that. I guess we'll just increase that, or I'm just comparing those numbers.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, there is a cost to the Division of Insurance to collect the funds, so we wanted to cover that fiscal note. And then the fire chiefs indicated that, you know, there's a myriad of grant money that they can apply for with the overage that will, you know, go toward the prime mission of what they're doing. So we just didn't find $3 to be very heinous relative to what we all pay for, our fire premiums, but more importantly, what we all expect. My expectations are pretty damn high when I dial 911. There's a whole breadth of severity when I call that number, and I've called that number half a dozen times over the course of my life for a fire or emergency service call, and you know, it's gone from a grease fire to, you know, somebody on a street that's been damaged or injured to be in a redundant call for an automobile accident or something out in the middle of the road. We just had the Tenino Valley Sportsmen's Association building burned down Saturday morning in Fairbanks. Saturday morning, burned to the ground. They were able to save their gun collection and some of the other valuables, but burned to the ground. It's been there for decades. It's not serviced. It's in the borough. It's not in the city of Fairbanks. It misses it by the street corner. It's University and Airport is the cutoff, and they're on the wrong side of University Avenue, so they're probably served by the University Volunteer Fire Department, would be my guess. But I saw how many emergency service vehicles responded to that call, and I went down the frontage road, and I was stopped by paid troopers and police that were integrating, state and city, that were integrated on the road closure. But when I rerouted back down the main thoroughfare, which is Airport Way, there were 10 emergency service vehicles were there, and clearly from the labels that were there, it was this integrated emergency services that responded to that call. And I'm just interested in them being able to work together. And so that's the nature of this. And it's impractical in some ways. It creates a slippery slope. It's dangerous in the precedent that it could be setting. But it's difficult to collect. It's cumbersome. There's a thousand things wrong with it, except for the fact that when I dial 911, I want competent, trained, integrated people to show up and help me out.
Thank you,
and my neighbors as well. Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have actually three different questions. One is, the resolution from the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association recommends, as was noted earlier, the $5 charge, but they suggested on all fire insurance policy issues, but the bill applies only to homeowners. So, you know, my first question is, why only homeowners if businesses or the gun club or whatever is going to benefit from it? That's number one. Number two, setting it out as a $3 or $5 or whichever policy, I mean, charge for every policy means that the homeowner with a $200,000 home is paying as much as the homeowner with a $1.5 million home. They're both paying the same. And that troubles me a little bit if we're going to agree, okay, this is a tax, doing it the same for everybody is a concern. And then the last question, which may be, I don't know if it's for Barbara or not, but this budget estimate from the fire chiefs, is my question is this what's currently happening, or is this what, in the best case scenario, they'd like to have happening in once when funds are available?
The answers to the question through the chair are the question answer to question number one is it's simpler to collect it off of residences than businesses that have multiple policies. It was when, as we discussed with the Division of Insurance, who doesn't like this approach in the first place, they indicated that it was simpler and less cumbersome to go after homeowner policies. Secondly, it's not regressive relative to the value of homes because it's simpler. And the third question I wouldn't have the answer to because I would let the fire chief speak to their own budget.
Follow-up?
In answer then, so if it's simpler to collect just from homeowners, it means really that homeowners would be subsidizing businesses and other policy owners who don't have to participate in the coverage cost.
Through the chair, most business owners own homes in Alaska. I mean, this wasn't to single out residences versus commercial. It was really the Division of Insurance does not like the nature of the collection mechanism. They indicated it would be much more cumbersome to involve commercial policies than it would be residential policies. And we were working with the Division of Insurance to try and satisfy as many of the objections that they put forward to concentrate on the greater good that comes with establishing a Fire Safety Standards Council. We're interested in protecting all Alaskans. Our intention initially was to task businesses and residences, and this barely passes the smell test with the Division of Insurance. They will surely tell you that. And when we suggested that it should apply to businesses, and I don't remember the rationale, but it was clearly too cumbersome for them when it did that because it created some web that was more difficult. So we're trying to take something that they don't like very much and make it as likable as possible, I think would be the answer to your question.
Will we be getting through the chair, sorry, from the Division of Insurance on this issue?
Yeah.
Good.
Representative Gatto.
Speaking of... I can't believe it!
Representative Gatto, you're up.
I needed to talk to the fire chief, although Barb might be able to answer. There's plenty of property that's not in a fire service area. Would they, and their insurance bills are pretty high because they're not in a fire service area, they're going to burn no matter what. Would they also be billed $3?
Through the chair, I'm assuming that would be the case. As Representative Ramirez said, we're trying to keep this as simple as possible. And I don't think we would discriminate about the amount of the policy or where it is. That's a good question, but I don't think that we could really.
I almost would think it could be challenged. I needed to ask the fire chief a question when he gets a chance to come up.
Are there any further questions for Barbara?
If I might, Mr. Chairman, one thing I would like to add. There's just a slight discrepancy in figures. I just saw the fiscal note from Commerce for the first time today. And their estimate of how many homeowner policies there are is 160,000. The figure that I provided in the packet was a little higher than that. So I got that from Linda Hall. a division of insurance, so I'm not sure. It lies somewhere in between there, I would suspect.
Are you going to be counting mobile homes in this, modular homes?
Anybody that buys homeowner insurance. Yes.
Does that include tenants that might have it, that have property covered but not don't own the property?
That I don't know, sir. I think we have someone here from the Division of Insurance here or online that can probably answer that.
Well, I think I'll weigh in at this point in time. I resigned from the Central Emergency Service Fire Service Area Board. I'd been on it 9 years. I'd been chair of the last 5 years on it, and we handled our training. We were probably 40% on-call volunteers, 60% paid staff, but we handled our training with our mill rate. We'd looked at this, participating in it. We were participating in it through the Fire Chiefs Association, Firefighters Association. But we trained with Nikiski. We had joint training with a neighboring district that also had volunteers. Our volunteers in both service areas are amongst the best in the state. We cover for the Kenai Fire Department, which is all paid. We have mutual aid packs. The impact on this, on us, would be assisting other regions in the state possibly, but it looks to me, I mean, when I look at Fairbanks with 107 road service areas, I'm at a total loss on how there isn't a fire service area up there for the unincorporated areas within the borough, or outside the city limits at least. Do we have a fire service area in Fairbanks, or do we just have a downtown? How do we handle this?
We have some Fairbanks firemen on the line that can answer that better than I can.
Okay. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, I guess, a question for the chair because of his experience with insurance and both sides of this issue. Do you think that there would be any savings at all? I mean, first off, $3 a year for me is, I don't even question it. But what I would think is it would almost save. I mean, you mentioned that you had a mill rate, or that you covered this in-house within your own district with a tax. It seems like this would almost save you money by not having that, if they had money for the fire service board for training like this. I guess it's just for the board, not training.
I can't answer that specifically, but I think my greatest problem with it is the funding source. I think when we open this up and we use we start out with homeowners policies or fire policies that it goes from $3 to $5 to $8, that we look at other insurance policies as being a funding source. And I might add, I've been out of insurance for 6 years, have no interest in anything related to insurance, and oftentimes wish I didn't know anything about insurance, particularly when it's workers' comp. But having said that, I personally have a problem, and I've discussed this with the sponsor of the bill and trying to find out how we can find a revenue stream that doesn't open up a can of worms, because I think he correctly described it as being a slippery slope. And I know that I personally have a problem with taxes just for the purpose of taxes, no matter, you know, in this particular case, it's, you know, a good idea, but I think it's the wrong revenue source. But having said that, are there any further questions for Barbara? Or me, I guess.
Yeah. Just to follow up on Mr. Chair, if I may.
Sure.
On what you just stated is, you know, last year we just passed an E911 tax of $2.50 on each phone line, which includes your fax, your internet. And most places don't even have emergency 911 locating system set up yet.
That particular bill was a result of federal mandate. That's where that one came out, and I believe that started out at a much higher. I think it was the initial was, and I believe somebody from the municipal league will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was $5 a phone line or a cell, so you could have somebody, you could have a family had three cells, three phone lines, fax line, and end up paying $35-$40 a month. We started out, I believe, at up to $2, and I think a lot of the cities started at $1.50, but it was for the purpose of generating enhanced 911, which is to be able to determine the location. So if you got somebody with a heart attack and they can't say where they call, you know, you can track it down. But
where was that regarding? Comparing the tubes.
Excuse me.
Different topic.
Sure.
Okay. How are urban firefighting departments funded currently for training and...
Through the chair, right now the Fire Standards Council that handles this is funded by the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association and the Alaska Firefighters Association. They basically fund themselves with donations.
Let me back up just a little bit. The Firefighters Council is interested in training firefighters across the state. Is that correct? Because a big part of this money goes for travel and training. But currently, the urban areas have firefighters who are already trained and paid for training and whatever. Where's that funding from?
Through the chair, I misunderstood your question.
Yeah, sorry. Maybe I didn't say it well.
The answer is I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I don't know it. It does anybody?
On the Kanab Peninsula, most of us mill rate.
So taxpayers are paying for it on the Kenai Peninsula for mm-hmm. their firefighter service already?
Yeah.
And I would assume that's true for Anchorage. Does anybody know?
I think it'd be safe to assume Anchorage is the same way.
So this policy would be, I mean, if we funded the firefighter standards now, Fire Safety Council, whatever, it would be for areas that are not currently served?
I believe, and I think I'll be corrected immediately if I'm wrong on this, but I believe the fire service, I believe they do more than provide training. I believe they promulgate standards statewide and other issues other than uh-huh. training, but I might be, am I correct?
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Just in response to a question posed by Representative Newman through the chair, I think it would be an overstatement to say that this is going to save money for homeowners on premiums. That was one of the things that we discussed specifically. And the funding source, terrible. Sucks. I don't like it either. But it's not been funded. It's needed. You're not going to get it out of the House or Senate finance committees. The mill rates in the various communities do not create what's necessary, which is a mosaic that goes over the state that leads to a uniform fire safety standards council. And the firemen themselves don't have an internal mechanism the way that the law enforcement does in writing citations and having a portion of the citations go toward the funding of this. And I think that the best people to answer these questions, because I don't want to take too much time from the committee, is get the firemen on the line and let them at least make their case and educate the committee as to what in the heck they're talking about, what they would use the funds for, and what they need it for. And then, you know, Mr. Chairman, I'm with you. And if we can go to the Finance Committee and try and find a source and they say, yeah, we'll do it, then right on. But if they say no and they say it with some conviction, then I'd like to have this bill come back before this committee and really take a look at this undesirable funding source for something that I think leads to safer communities across the state. I'd be willing to go up there and make the trip with you upstairs, because we're not talking about community service patrols, which might be unique to the mm-hmm. Fairbanks area. That's not what I'm interested in. As it was presented to me by the fire chiefs, this is something that all the fire chiefs across the state of Alaska and you know, on a case-by-case basis, I think sometimes these things are okay. Slippery slopes. You know, we gave Representative Holmes a ride home last night in the van, and she goes up a hill and she puts cleats on her shoes so she doesn't slip. Some issues require cleats. Some issues you shouldn't try and go up the slope. This one I think is worth strapping on the cleats if there's no other funding source available. And
I guarantee by the time I get out of this room, I'll have at least three phone calls from three chiefs that I've known for at least 25 years that have my cell number. And Gabrielle Ledoux, you're up.
Well, I guess I was just wondering whether Representative Ramros just said that, unlike the public safety officers, the fire chiefs have no mechanism in which to write citations, in which things can be take, in which funding can be come out of the citations. Well, maybe we ought to look into that as a possible funding source.
Well, if there are no further questions for Barbara, I think we're going to go to the people online. Starting with Jack Smith and Burrow. Are you there? Are you with us, Jack?
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you doing? Could you please...
We're doing good. We're in the middle of a heat wave. So.
Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Jack Smith, and I serve as the chief for the North Slope Borough Fire Department.
Well, please continue.
I'm a lifelong Alaska resident and have been in Barrow for the past 27 years. And I just want to testify in support of the Fire Standards Council funding. Alaska's Fire Service has made some significant strides to obtain recognition by organizations like the International Fire Service Accreditation Congress, or IFSAC, for training provided in our state. This recognition is similar to that granted to a school or a college by the Northwest Commission. Our program has been evaluated and determined to be of the same caliber as others around the country. This means we are treated as equals. Unfortunately, our progress to expand training and educational efforts has been hampered by the lack of a functional Fire Standards Council with the needed administrative support. IFSAC recognition is similar to that granted to an EMT that may obtain a national registry certification. Provides industry standard recognition, something common to any professional field. For career personnel and volunteers that respond to emergency calls around our state, this recognition has proven an incentive. Not only do they obtain training, but they also complete written and practical testing that determines their ability to perform skills comparable to other firefighters in the country. So why is this important to Alaska's Fire Service? It means Alaskans educated in the state can better compete for jobs, both in-state and around the country. IFSAC is a known and recognized certification the oil industry and other organizations acknowledge. The military offers IFSAC-recognized courses. This means Alaskans can compete for jobs, something we hear every industry say is important for our people. The Alaska Fire Standards Council has been authorized for a number of years without financial support from the state. Most advisory councils or boards receive some type of financial assistance or support to perform their basic mission. Thankfully, Alaska's Fire Service has stepped up to provide some limited assistance to enable the Fire Standards Council to occasionally meet. Progress to formalize and develop Alaska's fire training programs has been limited without adequate administrative support. This increases the risk to firefighters and the public as organizations attempt to deliver training and education without clear guidance. The Fire Service is not requesting anything unique. Most other states develop training and certification programs they work with departments to administer. This ensures consistency and quality. The North Slope Borough is proud one of our firefighter graduates competed against others and obtained a job at Capital City Fire and Rescue. Many would have never believed training could have been offered in a rural hub of Alaska to prepare an individual for a job in the big city. While we were sad to see him leave, other young adults recognized the value of education and training, as well as its ability to open doors for a career. Providing financial support to the Fire Standards Council will enable it to become a more effective body in developing and coordinating a fire service training and education in Alaska. Your support by recognizing the importance of these efforts is appreciated. Thank you for your attention.
Any questions? Representative Gatto.
Yeah, isn't most of the training that occurs in areas as a result of the mill rate for the fire service area?
Through the chair, on the North Slope, the North Slope Borough, of course, funds our fire department, and we are accredited by the state of Alaska to offer firefighter 1 and 2 training. So a lot of the training that we provide is funded by our municipality. The concern is the development of new training programs and the guidance that allows us to offer those. And that's really where the state, or most states, show their support and guidance by helping the state overall deliver those kind of programs. So training, yes, at the local level is funded by our municipality.
Follow?
Yeah, thanks. Are you saying then that adding $3 to each homeowner will change the amount of training that occurs?
Through the chair, I think really what the Fire Standards Council, funding of the Fire Standards Council is intended to do is to provide the state with the guidance. So I have professionals here that offer training, but preparing folks to offer training at that next level, at that certification level, is really where the state provides the testing and the guidance, the certification. We don't really interface on an international level. That's typically what the states have done. So in Washington, if you work with the fire marshal's office, they are usually the one that coordinates those kind of training programs. And really what we're doing is each department is trying to work kind of as a network, doing our own thing, and we're missing kind of that leadership at the top, which would be the Fire Standards Council.
Well, the way I see it is that the council will have money for travel and for contracts, and I'm expecting the council then to be an organization that, when requested, can send somebody to a firehouse for training on the weeks or the during drills or classroom work. Is that the way it would work?
Through the chair, I'm not sure I'm the most knowledgeable person about the inner workings of the council. I believe, like a lot of the EMS councils, there is money to bring the members of the council together so that they can review the programs and procedures. I would suspect that at some point the Fire Standards Council would also take on the role of maybe accrediting department. So as an example, when our department was accredited to offer training on behalf of the state at the Firefighter 1 level, we actually had an individual from the state that came up and looked at our resources, looked at our training supplies, looked at our training records, similar to what a college or university goes through when the Northwest Commission comes in. So they were evaluating our program. And I would assume that that would be the role that the Fire Standards Council would take more of if they had the funding and the resources to do that.
Well, thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Jeff Tucker, and I think Jeff is going to have some answers for us. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fine, Kurt. I don't know if I have any good answers for you, but I'll make something up for you.
Just make something up on this. How you contemplate that it'll be operating if it gets funded? What okay. We'll be doing? What direction we'll be going in?
Okay, I'll start off by introducing myself. My name is Jeff Tucker. I'm the fire chief for the North Star Volunteer Fire Department in North Pole, Alaska. I'm also the second vice president for the Alaska State Fire Chiefs Association.
And where else did you used to work, Jeff?
I'm sorry?
Where else did you used to work?
I used to be the fire chief for Central Emergency Services, where Kurt was the board chair. And I don't have your home phone number, though, Kurt.
Oh, I thought you had my cell still.
I can probably find it, though. What we're looking for with the Fire Standards Council, and Jack kind of alluded to it in his previous testimony, is it is a standard-making body that the fire chiefs and the fire departments in the state can utilize to train our personnel. It is a organization that will put forth the standards and for the minimum standards for firefighters, develop standards for company officers, engineers, fire prevention programs, arson investigation programs. They set the standards that the rest of us train to. They're not necessarily the trainers, but they authorize the rest of us to go out and have a core standard of curriculum that we can train to. The ISAC program, the accreditation program that Jack spoke of, currently we have our Firefighter 1, our Firefighter 2, our Methods of Instruction programs, and some other programs that are already IFSAC accredited in the state of Alaska. There's a desperate need for other programs to be accredited and be standardized throughout the state. And by having the Fire Standards Council there, they're the organization that will set those standards. They will develop the testing material, promulgate the standards that we can develop curricula for to train our people. They will also be the ones who can, some of the funding will go for the administration of testing. Currently, that portion of the state program is not being funded. So if we do a firefighter testing, they'll send a certifying officer to our program from the state to validate our test, take the test back to the state and grade it. So there are more of a standard-setting organization and a guide to how we in the fire service will conduct our business. They're not there to, you know, be our trainers. They're there to set the standards for which we train to. I'll take a breath.
Any questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tucker, do you think that an insurance company would recognize or that the Fire Standards Council, because they would be increasing the capabilities of the and the training, they would set standards, as you said, for fire testing. Would that have would that have an effect on insurance ratings, in your opinion?
Probably not on insurance rating. That's based on our ISO ratings, our insurance service organization ratings. So actually having that ability directly will not affect the insurance ratings. What it might have an offshoot of, and this is it'll have an indirect effect on it, in the fact that you can have departments who are currently organized out there may be able to improve their ISO rating by better training their departments they have to a higher level and indirectly improve their insurance rating. But that's not the direct impact and nor the purpose of the Fire Standards Council.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll ask one question.
Representative Gatto?
Thanks. If indeed, I think the whole purpose of this is so that we can make people safer. And the insurance company is one of the direct beneficiaries by paying lower claims or by paying less in the way of emergency medical care. Shouldn't this be funded by the insurance company since they seem to be the beneficiary?
Well, and again, I'm not the expert in this particular area, but there are some states where the insurance companies do fund this type of organization in the respective states. However, they have not seen fit to do so in the state of Alaska. Again, for us, it's as law enforcement folks have the ability to write tickets, that's part of their job. We in the fire service, are directly affecting, the homeowners, and through the insurance policies seems like an effective way for us to collect the monies for this. But I'm not sure how all the other states do their collection.
Jeff, this is Kurt again. How many service areas do you have in the Fairbanks area within the borough? Fire service.
In the Fairbanks North Star Borough, we have the City of Fairbanks Fire Department, the City of North Pole Fire Department, both municipal departments. Outside of that, we have the North Star Fire Service Area, we have the Steese Fire Service Area, we have the University Fire Service Area, and the Esther Fire Service Area, and the Chena Goldstream Fire Service Area. Mm-hmm. So there's five fire service areas outside the two municipal service areas.
So a little more than you had on the peninsula.
That's correct.
Follow-up or a new question, Representative Gatto?
I'm not sure if it's new or not. I would say two-thirds of the population of Alaska is probably located somewhere between Homer and Fairbanks. And an awful lot of those people have certainly in Anchorage, they have a paid department. They do training every day. I don't know that the Standards Council would have an effect on them. In the Mat-Su, they have training couple times a week. I don't know that the standards would have an effect upon them. I'm going to guess in Fairbanks it's a similar story. So if indeed we did nothing, we dispose of this bill without crediting it, giving it any passage, would it change any of the training that's being done as compared to if we did pass it?
Through the chair, absolutely it would. All those departments you mentioned are directly affected by the Fire Standards Council and the standards that they put forth. Even our minimum firefighter standards, Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2, where they're both are IFSAC-accredited programs, are what we teach our firefighters. And by not having the Standards Council in place, those programs will not be maintained, and our IFSAC accreditation could potentially go away. which would directly affect all the departments in their ability to recruit and train firefighters. The Fire Standards Council also promulgates, or hopefully will promulgate, the standards for other advanced level training. There are numerous types of programs, from arson investigation to hazardous materials response to public education programs to fire company officer programs and engineering programs, that are all standards that can be promulgated by the Fire Standards Council that they currently don't, because of the staff. There is no staffing to do that. The current staffing for the Fire Standards Council is made up by volunteers who volunteer their time to meet, and is somewhat funded, as Jack Smith mentioned earlier, through grants from the different fire organizations to try and keep this organization motivated and in place. But yeah, all the fire departments, paid and volunteer, rural and urban, in the state of Alaska are directly affected by the Fire Standards Council.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Good talking to you.
All right. See you later, Kurt. Thank you.
Mitch Flynn.
Hello, my name is Mitch Flynn, Fire Chief with the Steese Volunteer Fire Department. My organization borders the north side of Fairbanks, here within the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And I'm also sitting alongside Chief Tucker. And I also strongly support this legislation and would like to see it passed. Just going over some of my numbers and things, because I've been listening to you here for the last hour. The Fairbanks North Star Borough is comprised of a number of fire service areas and two cities that all provide fire protection, and probably 80 to 85% of the residents within the borough are protected by fire service areas or the two cities. And I do support holding standards the same for both paid or volunteer. It does not matter, and we need to be held equally to that. And the only way to do that is to have a functioning Fire Standards Council that provides that direction and leadership that we all follow, and meet minimum standards so we can do our job effectively.
Are there any questions for Mr. Flynn? Well, thank you very much for holding on and waiting for us. Next is Carol Reed.
My name is Carol Reed. I am the president of the State Firefighters Association. I respond with the Central Mat-Su Fire Department, and I hold a seat on the Fire Standards Council. And I would like to thank you for your consideration of the funding for the council. Today, as you've heard, the Firefighters Association with the fire chiefs have been the sole funding source for the council. As a firefighter, I understand that the training of firefighters to a standard creates a safer firefighter, as well as a more efficient firefighting effort to better serve the Alaskans. And one thing that I haven't heard brought up so far is that the Training and Education Bureau, which actually delivers some of the training to Alaska's firefighters, has so far absorbed the accreditation and the certification process into their budget, and we were notified by the Training Education Bureau that they can no longer absorb that cost. And so according to the statute that the legislature put forth when they developed the Fire Standards Council, that function was to be a Fire Standards Council function. Well, the funding sources being the firefighters and the Fire Chiefs Association, we can't absorb that. We don't have that kind of money to now certify the training that is put on by the various departments around the state, which has a huge impact on those that are giving the many, many hours that they put in to become certified, and now we have no mechanism to certify those folks, which has a huge impact not only on, they may be trained, but now they don't have a certificate to say that they are trained. They can't go to another state and say, I'm IFSAC certified and, qualified to try out for your department. So I think that is huge for our membership. The $3, I understand, it's kind of an education for me listening to you all talk about the insurance and how the insurance companies don't like it. And I can understand that being a homeowner, but the $3 charge is, that's a couple of candy bars. And I just think that from my point of view and from my association's point of view, that we really, if this isn't the funding source, we need to create a funding source to keep the Fire Standards Council going. So thank you for your consideration. I certainly appreciate it.
Well, thank you for testifying. Are there any questions for Ms. Reed? Thanks again. Let's see. Kenton Bryan, are you with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Kenton Bryan, calling you today from the Northwest Regional Office of the Property Casualty Insurers Association. I'm located in Olympia, Washington, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I will be brief. I just wanted to raise a couple of points. I've attended the hearing and have heard some of the things that have been brought up by members of the committee, as well as in the testimony. And I think one of the issues that has come through a couple of times in a couple of different ways is the issue of equity and fairness and how the bill is currently structured. As the bill is written, PCI would be opposing the legislation. However, we do appreciate both the intended goal here and the thoughtfulness with which the committee and Representative Ramos are approaching the issue. I think from our perspective, what we're concerned about here is there was mentioned a couple times about whether or not there's equity in assessing homeowners policyholders, a $3 fee annually for this program. And the inequity that was suggested is that it's not applying to business owners, it's not applying to automobile drivers, both of which could also suffer fires, obviously, and could potentially benefit from the improved training that fire personnel would receive from the revenue. But I think an even larger issue is the equity of the entirety of the program being placed, regardless of how broadly you spread this tax among insurance policyholders, whether you go to businesses or renters or homeowners or automobile drivers or others, you're still singling out one segment of, in fact, a responsible segment of the population that is purchasing insurance to protect their investment in their property and protect others through the liability policies they purchase on the property as well. And that's a little bit troubling, I think, to the insurers. Even though this is a surcharge, it goes on to the insurance policies that we sell. I don't see anywhere in the legislation where it's specified that this would be separately listed on a policy or invoice. So the insurer doesn't know necessarily that this is a surcharge for this purpose. It just looks like an increase in their insurance bill. Some may choose not to pay it for some reason. And, of course, as the tax collector for the state in this case, that leaves us kind of holding the bag, as it were, to make up any difference there. So that is also of a little bit of concern. Finally, I would like to suggest that there may be an impact here on any insurer that is domesticated, that chooses Alaska as its home base, that locates in Alaska and opens and makes that its corporate headquarters. I don't believe there are too many companies that are currently doing that. I'm aware of at least one, however, and it might be worth exploring if and when you speak to the insurance division over the course of debating this legislation. It may be worthwhile asking whether or not there might be a retaliatory impact of an increase in the fee on an Alaska domestic company. And I'll briefly explain that. And it's probably something that some of you might not have heard of before, but every state in the country has what's called an insurance retaliation or retaliatory tax. The purpose of that is to promote fair competition among insurers located in various states around the country. The way it works, in a nutshell, is that an insurance company that is based in a state but doing business in another state pays the hire of either the home state where they are located or the state in which they're running the business. So it is possible that if an insurer wrote outside the state of Alaska but was based in Alaska, it could see not only an increase in what it is paying to the state of Alaska, but also in states where it writes business elsewhere. That, of course, does not benefit Alaskans and, in fact, puts an Alaska-based company at a competitive disadvantage to companies located elsewhere. Again, I raise this more probably as a potential problem than an actual one. I don't know for sure. I would be speaking out of turn by suggesting that it's going to impact any insurers in Alaska that way. I don't know for sure if it would, but if indeed any were in that position or were considering such a move to Alaska, that would be an impediment. And I guess it would be a benefit for you to be reminded that Alaska is a challenging insurance market. I believe that the insurance division and the legislature has done a lot of work in recent years trying to make Alaska a better marketplace for insurers. And unfortunately, this legislation kind of goes in a different direction. And for those reasons, we would oppose the legislation as it's written.
Are there any questions for Mr. Bryan? Mr. Ramirez, Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the difficulty is finding the funding source. When we talked about law enforcement, you know, you don't dial a number to get a ticket. They have your number. And so one of the funding sources that we contemplated was when you dial 911 and fire protection or emergency services responds, then they could charge you for that. But the difficulty expressed by the fire officials is they don't want anybody to hesitate or wait until a small fire becomes a worse situation. They're like, okay, now I'm going to dial 911. And if we can't find a funding source that the fire services can initiate, and we cannot find a funding source through state government, through the general fund, because that's certainly not the climate around here, then I agree, yours is not a very good choice for the reasons that you cited, but the other choices seem to be worse. Where might you suggest that we look if we don't look to you, if the other potential sources are blocked because of personal safety and because of a climate here in the Capitol not to fund these kind of programs?
Through the chair, Representative Ramos, I'm certainly sympathetic to the point that you're making. However, I think something you said earlier in your testimony speaks volumes, and that is that this is legislation that you intended to protect all Alaskans. And in our view, it doesn't make a lot of sense for legislation to be approved that protects all Alaskans, but only at the expense of a few Alaskans. And I'll just remind the committee that I don't think that we view this as a tax on insurers, although I think there is some potential for us to be paying some of the costs if policyholders revolt against paying the $3 fee. But this is not a tax on us as much as it is a tax on insurance policyholders, and in fact, just homeowners policyholders.
And just for the record, Mr. Chairman, it's 178,000 homes, and I don't know what the average occupancy is, but it's not that large of a state. We felt that was the broadest way to cover the most amount of people to offer the greatest safety enhancement in the easiest possible way with a great deal of undesirable choices. But I thank you for your testimony, sir.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Doug Schrage. I'm probably butchering your name.
I'm well used to that.
Well, welcome to Labor and Commerce. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. My name is Doug Schrage, and I'm the first vice president of the Chiefs Association and also the deputy chief of the Anchorage Fire Department. So.
And I wasn't even close, was I?
No, that's quite all right.
Thanks again.
Well, I signed up to testify for the need for this funding, and I'm in support of the legislation. And I've been listening with interest to a lot of the commentary made, the points that I would have made have already been made. But there are a few questions that have come up that I think I could probably help out with. And one of them is a clarification of the role of certification versus training. So it's true that most fire departments, however they're funded, provide much of the training for themselves as they're able. And where they're not able, the state training and education bureau under the fire prevention division is able to help out with that. And as Carol Reed recently testified, they've recently announced that they're no longer to be able to perform the certification of that training. So a good example of this is a recent initiative in the industry having to do with rescue intervention crews. OSHA has declared that for all structural fires, for firefighters to make entry, they have to have two members assembled as part of a rescue team outside, and has specified certain duties that they have to be prepared to accomplish. And So fire departments throughout the industry, throughout the country and beyond, but particularly here in Alaska, have been attempting to meet that training need on their own in the absence of any sort of certification or standard. And so various fire departments, and I'd like to recognize in particular the Fairbanks Fire Department, has put together a very good training program. And they worked with the state to achieve recognition by the state, and they've been traveling around the state providing this training at on a fee basis. And they recently came down and did a two-week firefighter exchange program with the Fairbanks Fire Department. These three Fairbanks firefighters came and spent 2 weeks in residence in our department, and in return, we sent firefighters of our own, trained in other specialties that are up in Fairbanks, teaching a class that is not similarly recognized. So one of the purposes of the Standards Council is to take application for training courses that have been put together, develop standards, and then after the training has been accomplished, go out and certify as a third-party observer that the training has been accomplished and that the participants have met the standard. Presently, the state facilitates this sort of certification through the use of volunteer certifying officers, of which I am one, and fire officers and firefighters throughout the state are on a voluntary sign-up list. And when, for example, the Palmer Fire Department or the Homer Fire Department or any other fire department anywhere in the state wants to put on a Firefighter 1 class, the state arranges for one of us to voluntarily go to their community and observe the testing at the end. Now, this is the state Division of Fire Prevention has been able to reimburse some of the cost through a stipend and per diem. But most of the travel and so forth is borne by the COs on a voluntary basis. This is where the budget for the Standards Council would come into place, and that speaks to the question about the money for travel. It's for the certifying officers. To the question about why are we addressing homeowners' policies only at the neglect of commercial properties? And I would just share with you one of our discussion points, which was that presently the state, through the Division of Fire Prevention, is able to directly impact fire safety in commercial occupancies through the plan review process and permitting process, which is not applicable to residences. And so without the Standards Council in this way, the state has really no way to positively impact the fire safety in homes other than through a voluntary educational program and so forth. So this, obviously, since 98, the funding for the Fire Standards Council has been on at the top of our legislative agenda every year when we've come to Juneau, and we're very encouraged by the fact that this pending legislation is before us. And so in closing, I would just share a little bit of an analogy, and that is that the state licenses truck drivers, hairdressers, beauticians, all manner of public services, but not firefighters. And who else, besides any of these occupations, does the things that we do that are permitted to enter your home under state law without a warrant and provide care and rescue occupants and put out fires? And so we think that it's a worthwhile cause, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Good question.
Will you take a question?
Certainly.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Sharkey. Jay Ramirez, you know, we're struggling with the funding source here. We have one that's less than perfect. You know, I certainly will acknowledge that. Through 1998, what are the various funding sources that the Firefighters Association have strived for to get to fund this valuable program?
Well, as I think was previously suggested by one of the other persons testifying, is we have funded it through the fire chiefs and the firefighters associations voluntarily, and we've applied for a couple of grants that have not yet been successful. What other funding schemes have we sought? We've examined what other states are doing, and some of them are doing them through excise taxes. Some of them are funded voluntarily or willingly, I guess, by the insurance industry, I believe. For my own part, I'm not really able to say much more about what other funding ideas there are. Direct appropriation, obviously, would be the simplest, but as you've already observed, that's not a realistic option.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Scharge. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks again. Well, we're going to try to get out of here in 5 minutes, but we've got three people in the audience that haven't testified yet, so I think we'll just take them in order. Did you know who signed up first?
Yes. I was here first.
Name and affiliation, please, Kathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm with the Alaska Municipal League. The league is fully in support of 211. I would like to concur with what Representative Rammer said. We're not totally wild about the way it's being funded, and it's too bad that the climate in this state is such that we can't go upstairs to the fifth floor and get funding for this. I think it's basically chump change when you look at the budget. But I do have the Alaska Fire Standards Council mission statement, which is: the mission of the Alaska Fire Standards Council is to establish training and performance standards for fire service personnel and curriculum requirements for the certification of training programs. The Alaska Fire Chiefs Association is an affiliate member of the Alaska Municipal League. We've offered them support over the last number of years. We know that this Fire Standards Council has been an issue with them for the last 10 years or so, and we have helped them look for ways to fund it. I would really like to thank Representative Rammers for at least taking this path that, at this point, it seems like the only path available, and maybe at some point, if taxpayers say enough is enough, that sometime the legislature might look at other ways to fund it. But for now, I think this maybe might be the only way. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Kathy? Jeffrey Schrott.
Jeffrey Trout, Deputy Director of the Division of Insurance. This also will be short and sweet. The division, this is a matter of policy, would oppose anything that increases the cost of insurance to people. Having said that, we also believe this is very meritorious. I mean, everybody's in support. There's no pro-fire lobby, and everybody is in support of doing everything we can to increase professionalism in the standards for firefighting, because we all rely on them now and then. Again, we'd prefer to see a different funding mechanism. Having said that, that's what I came to say, and I'd be happy to open myself up to questions.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you very much. We heard testimony earlier, I guess from the sponsor, that the director of the Division of Insurance had indicated that it was it would be challenging to collect a fee on all types of insurance, that it was just much simpler to do it on homeowners insurance.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I think that's correct. It's and your question is why? Is that my understanding?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I assume. All right. There's for homeowners, it's sort of easy, because everybody who's got a mortgage, everybody should have it, and certainly if you have a mortgage, you've got something to protect you against liability, fire, et cetera. In the commercial context, it could be different. There could be, different. You could have more than one company sharing the risk, and then which one pays the $3? You could also have we have surplus lines where it's a non-admitted carrier, and how do we keep track of that? we bill, or not bill, but every insurance company regularly that has a that provides the homeowner's insurance regularly submits premium taxes, and it's fairly simple just to pop another line on there and add $3 to that per policy. It makes it easier. Plus, as Representative Ramirez had mentioned earlier, the person who owns that commercial building usually is also a homeowner, so they're paying $3 as well. So, to the extent that you're worried about double taxation, and I know we're talking about a fairly small amount of money, but that perhaps is another reason. I haven't discussed it directly with the director, but I have talked with some of our people about that. And it's just administratively, it's a lot easier to set it up. It's not rocket science. We have to add a few lines of code to our computer. So it's not rocket science. It's just computer science.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. By the same token, would it be challenging to make it a percent of the policy value rather than so that the total amount collected was still the same?
Sure. To the Chair, Representative Gardner, it would become much more difficult because as it is now, nobody reports to us. The insurance companies don't report to us. We've insured Joe Blow's house for $250,000 and Mary Smith's house for $500,000. So for us to even guess at the outset until we get that kind of report, we could easily make a big mistake and overcharge and undercharge. We'd be based on speculation. So we have to get that information from the companies. From the companies itself, and then it would become, I think, fairly difficult to sort of rifle through that and figure out how much premium everybody in Alaska's paying for how much, $100,000, and then bill them accordingly. My answer would be different if it were $300 or $3,000 we were talking about putting on, because that would obviously be more burdensome. But it. As an administrative matter, and probably as a matter of computer science, it would be more difficult, I think.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto?
Pass, thank you.
Can I pass?
I do have a question. Thank you. Since this has been done in other states and other manners, do you have any history of that? Can you enlighten us as to maybe methods they use someplace else?
The Chair, Representative Bush, no, I'm afraid not. I don't know. I know that other states have done it, but I don't know the details of their program.
Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it require a change in statute to increase the fee? I mean, if it's at $3 now, if it goes to $4, $5, is that...
The Chair, Representative Newman, yeah, it would take increase because the bill says $3. So, if we or you wanted to make it $5, that'd have to be done through statute.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll squeeze the chief in real quick.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. I hope you aren't going to deduct the fire alarm time from my 2 minutes. I support this bill.
Oh, please identify yourself.
Excuse me. I'm Eric Mormon. I'm the fire chief here in Capital City Fire Rescue here in Juneau. So I represent all the stations here in Juneau. There's only one department, I should say. I'm certainly in favor of this bill, and I'd like to give you kind of nuts and bolts of this. You've heard a lot from my colleagues out there in the ether. When I hire somebody, for example, the gentleman who came down from Barrow, one of the requirements that they have is that they have a Firefighter 1 certificate. I also hire people who test with us from the lower 48, as well as from the state of Alaska. That's a requirement of my department because when someone comes in, it's important to me to know that they are well-trained and they know what they're doing. If they do not have the Firefighter 1 certification, I have to train them at my expense, which the training itself is expensive, relatively, because we're talking somewhere around 160 hours of training. But also, I have to pay overtime to cover for while this person is out getting trained, and I have to pay them while they're getting trained. So the certification from a dollars and cents point is very important. I also have a volunteer contingency within our department. Two-thirds of our department is volunteer, one-third is paid. Those volunteers have to be able to work at the exact same level as my paid staff. And in a mutual aid situation, such as you have in Fairbanks and other areas outside of Juneau, you have different departments coming in, and it's extremely important to know that when you order that firefighter to go into the building as part of a group, that they know what they're doing and they will be effective and, more importantly, safe. When I started my career 33 years ago in Delta Junction as a volunteer, I was handed this tank with a mask. This is an SCBA mask. Put it on. This is how you turn it on. Here's your rubber coat, plastic helmet, hip boots, and rubber gloves. Now see that house that's blowing fire out of every door and window? Go put it out. And that was my training. We've come a long ways in 33 years. We're much better. The Standards Council is extremely important to make sure that our firefighters who are going in those situations are safe, that they're effective, that they can operate as part of a team. There's also other things besides putting out fires. How about the instructors? They're certified by the state currently. How about fire investigators? Very important thing. Again, state certified. And there's a whole variety of gamuts of certifications from the state. The state fire marshal's office cannot any longer afford to support this program. It's extremely important. We've been trying to get funding mechanism for years. We had a bill that was passed some years ago where the insurance companies were allowed to put money into the Fire Standards Council and use that as a credit towards their premium payment. How many insurance companies step forward to do that? Zero. So we've been funding this off of raffle tickets and pull tabs, and that's how we've been able to scrape along to the best of our ability with what we have now. And after 33 years, and this is the last thing I'd like to share with you, last week I talked with a fire chief from Angoon, which is a small isolated village not far away from here. They had a structure fire where two people died. They ran out of hose. Their nozzle broke and they didn't have a spare. He's got six guys. We had smoke inhalation on them. They ran out of air cylinders. They have a whole variety of grab bag stuff. And he came to me and he says, I've got six people that I need to train. Can you help me? This is after 33 years. We've got to step up, set standards, set training programs, and equip not only the places such as the luxury of Juneau and Anchorage and Fairbanks that has a mill rate, that has a tax base, but all these small places, because they don't have fires often, but when they do, if they don't know how to do this properly and are not properly trained, certified, and equipped, those are the firefighters that are going to die, and those are the people in the homes which are going to die. So thank you very much for the opportunity. That kind of concludes my remarks, and I'm available for any questions.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Very good testimony. I appreciate it. You said that the instructors and investigators are state certified.
That's correct.
Do you know how that's funded?
Currently, all the certification programs through the state is being handled by fire service training. They do not have a budget for that. So they've been picking it up as best they can out of receipts. To send people over to ensure that local training is done properly according to the standards and that people are equally trained has again been absorbed by their accounts receivable, but it's not part of their budgeted items.
Thank you.
Very, very quickly, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ramos.
Thank you. Chief, it's a pleasure to see. I've known you for a long time. I thank you very much for your service. Your testimony was wonderful. I would encourage members to talk to Representative Gatto or to call your own fire stations at home, and you'll find out that it's embarrassing to find out with what low regard we treat our fire departments until there's an accident in our home, in our neighborhood, somewhere where you dial 911, and then you expect everything. And it's very compelling testimony. It's such an honor to be able to listen to you in this capacity, Chief. And really, thanks.
Thank you. Any further questions? We'll be holding this over while Representative Rammers and I figure out where we're going to get the money.
Okay.
We're adjourned.